Welcome to the Next Distinctive Coaching podcast, in which I'm talking to Charlie Cannon, Performance and Enhancement Coach. For over a decade, Charlie has taken individuals, teams and leaders of organisations to new heights of performance and well-being. He's a leading authority in the science of resilience development, a performing under pressure coach who has worked with Olympians, Oscar-winning actors, CEOs and successful sales teams, and a high adversity trainer specialising in helping first responders manage the unique stress of their occupations. At Distinctive People, we're speaking to a range of coaches about coaching for performance and the lessons we can learn in business from sport. The coaches we're meeting have a personal experience, interest or business connection with a particular sport, and we're delighted to be speaking to Charlie. Hello, Charlie. Lovely to catch up with you today.
Hi, Penny. Yeah, great to be here too.
Good. I know you work with leaders and teams and help them build resilience to embrace change, and you've been influenced by your own journey as a successful sportsman. And I'm curious about the lessons that sport can learn from business or vice versa.
Thanks, Penny. Yeah. So great question. So maybe I'll give a bit of context about my sporting background. That was my love growing up. You know, I think we all have passions, don't we, growing up? And I certainly felt happier when I was on the sporting fields than I did in the classroom. And that was my love. And look, I was a pretty talented sportsman. I ended up playing rugby for England as a schoolboy, West of England hockey and county cricket. So I played at a high level. What was known as a bit of a fixed mindset, though. So I never really realized my potential on the sporting field. I relied too heavily on my talent. So I've circled back to this playing sport at a slightly more mature age and still learning massive lessons from sport. And the sport I play now is I used to play in team sports, and it's a very different context than an individual sport. And as you mentioned, my area of expertise is in resilience. And that's what I've been researching, training and coaching in and translating a lot of the things I've learned from sport into business contexts. So I wanted to play a sport that was very psychologically demanding. And so I took up tennis very seriously because of that, and really to test and train my resilience. And I now play tennis on what's known as the ITF Seniors Tour. And I play around the globe. And I've actually managed to make it to number 15 in Great Britain with some bigger aspirations within the 45 to 50s age group. But I'm continuously learning about myself. And I think there's some great lessons that we can translate both from team sports and individual sports into business. And I also, just a little bit more context, I work with a couple of consultancies or have worked. I used to work with Lane 4 that was set up by Adrian Morehouse, an Olympic gold medalist. And they've been one of the pioneers at translating performance psychology into the business world and taking those lessons from Adrian. And then also with Matthew Saeed, who I do a lot of work, great work around growth mindset and fixed mindset. And again, Matthew has a background in sport as well. So I tend to align myself with consultancies who have that connection and do that work within business. Yeah.
Fantastic. A huge wealth of experience to draw on. Yeah. So why do you feel the focus on personal and individual performance is important to teams in achieving high performance?
Well, that's a great question, but let me circle back. So I think I've got some more to give on the first one, and I want to come back to that one, Penny. So what are the lessons you asked me in the first question? So I define resilience as our ability to get ready for, respond, and recover from stress, adversity, and challenge. All right. So what can business learn? I think there's something in sport that they do incredibly well is around preparing for challenge. They put a lot of time into preparing for adversity. So when adversity happens, they're ready. If we look at what happened in COVID, for example, I think none of us knew what was going to happen, but there was a lot of reactivity to resilience. You know, let's do some resilience training now. I'm a big believer that we need to be proactive with resilience. It's one of the number one things that can protect us from mental ill health. We know that resilience can drive performance and well-being, and I think we need to get on the front foot with this. Adversity is natural, challenges is natural. How can we train ourselves physically, mentally and emotionally to be able to prepare for adversity? So I would think that that's one thing that sport can really give us. And if I think about that in my tennis, I am really preparing before a match, you know, putting some time in before I compete. So what else can we learn? Well, I say respond to challenge, because challenge is inevitable. I also think it's about regulation. So again, if I think about tennis, it's a very psychologically demanding sport. It's a very interesting sport because you can actually lose, or you can win more points than the opposition and still lose the match. So if you think about that, 50% losing, 50% winning, there's a whole lot of setbacks in a tennis game, which you're constantly having to handle and deal with and manage. If you don't know how to manage yourself emotionally and psychologically, you're going to derail your performance. So that ability to recover quickly from a setback is crucial in tennis. So I would say that's something that, you know, is a great lesson you can learn from an individual perspective, and then you can take that back into an organization. But I think the biggest one, and I think which absolutely crucial for right now, is recovery. They did some research into the top 10 tennis players in the world in the 1980s by a guy called Dr. Jim Lehr. And he wanted to look what separated the best tennis players in the world to the top 100. The number one thing was the ability for those top 10 players to recover between points, to recover and recharge when they change ends. Wow. We are seeing a mass epidemic of burnout and exhaustion. It doesn't matter what organization or sector I work in, people have not recovered and recharged from COVID yet. We're on exhaustion. We need to prioritize recovery and recharging, just like they do, athletes do, put so much emphasis. It's one of the most important part of their sports and conditioning program is the recovery phase. We don't respect recovery in business. We don't respect recharging, and resilience is as much about recharging as it is enduring. And we need to, I think, work smarter, not harder. Managing energy, not time, is the key to high performance. And if we do not respect recovery and learn how to do that practically and pragmatically, how we set up our meetings, how we respect breaks in between meetings, how we have leaders who role model well-being and encourage people getting good night quality sleep, how we encourage people to take active recovery during the day. We stipulate that people should go to the gym. We say to them, yes, you need to do that. That's part of your work. We know from a neuroscientific perspective, if people have exercised, they're going to be more productive and focused. So there's lots of things I could talk about there. Another point, focus. One of the big challenges we've got in the future of business is distraction. We have so many distractions. As technology progresses, we get pulled into so many different directions. The high performers of the world are going to learn to harness focus. They're going to learn to be able to block out the noise. They're going to set boundaries around their phones. They're going to learn what it takes to get into flow and high performance without those distractions. Sport teaches you how to focus. A game like tennis, you have to concentrate, which then will also strengthen parts of the brain that will enable you to concentrate when you get back to your work. There are many things that can help us concentrate, like mindfulness. But those types of skills, I think, are going to be invaluable for the future of work, this capacity to focus. A couple of other things I put here. Process goals rather than outcome goals. Another great story from Andy Murray. Andy Murray, obviously, I'm sure you'll all know. He got to two or three, can't remember the number, Grand Slam finals before he won a Grand Slam. One of the things that was holding him back is he was focusing too much on the outcome. He was focusing too much on winning the Grand Slam. And when he started working, I can't remember whether it was Ivan Lendl or Brad Gilbert, there was a focus then to let go so much of the outcome of winning Wimbledon or winning the US Open or Australia. It was actually focusing on the process goals. So what do we mean by process goals? The small little things that you do. So in a tennis thing, it would be just focusing on, let's say, OK, I'm going to hit the serve in that direction. That's how I'm going to hit it. You were just focusing on the goal in the moment rather than thinking I'm going to win this game. And I think that's a very powerful way to help us achieve our goals by creating habits and looking at process goals, not just outcome goals. So I'm just going to sidetrack now to rugby, because that was the individual performance. So I think from if I look at my experience of team sport, what can we learn there? I think there's lots of crossovers. I think in a sport like rugby, the clarification of roles and responsibilities, we're super clear in a team like rugby of what position you are and what specifically you do in the game. I think often in business, there's a lack of clarity around roles and responsibilities, and that lack of clarity causes confusion and a lack of performance. So I think being super clear on that roles and responsibilities. I think another, a sport like rugby, it's quite a physical sport. It's quite an aggressive sport. And it's crucial that you have each other's back in the team, because if you don't have each other's back, people can get hurt. And it's having that kind of that knowing that your other team members have got each other's back. And I think that we can learn a lot from sport. How can we create teams where we create teams of trust? And I think this is actually something that we can bring back from business to sport, is actually psychological safety, which is being applied a lot in sport now. But actually, the term psychological safety actually came from business. And psychological safety is an environment where people feel safe to speak up. They won't be judged or criticized. There's a lack of interpersonal fear within the team, which is a big driver of team performance and team resilience. And again, I think that is something that we can learn from business. That, in fact, that's taken back to sport. But I think that's one of the levers that can help build trust. So trust is crucial. Lastly, I was thinking about sport. Again, clarity of vision. I think sport in many ways has an advantage there in business. It's so clear on its purpose. It's so clear on its vision. But again, it's so important. And I think that clarity of vision and purpose can be a real lever to drive performance in business as well. And if I was going to name one more, and I know I've got a lot here, is I think in business, it's difficult to create feedback cultures. People fear feedback often. And we know that feedback, in informal feedback, consistent informal feedback, I'm not talking about performance reviews, I'm not a big fan of those. I'm talking about the consistency of informal feedback that's done every single day that drives performance. And in sport, that is inherent. You're hungry to want to grow, learn and develop and get better. How can we learn from that and create those and destigmatize feedback, make it a part that it's just about growth and learning? So there we go. I hopefully there are some takeaways, both from an individual sport, but then also from a team sport as well. And now I can circle back to your next question.
Okay, Charlie, some fantastic nuggets of wisdom there and learning that I'm sure we can all relate to, we'll reflect on. We often speak in the coaching world about creating a coaching culture in organisations. How do you believe this drives high performance in the sporting world, in your view, and how can organisations best create this culture?
Here's an example. So the New Zealand rugby team. They were the most successful team in history. I wouldn't be surprised if they circle back and win the World Cup. Let's see. I know they had an off phase recently, not as much as the England rugby team. If you look at their record, you know, if we look at kind of success as a metric of wins to losses, they're a pretty extraordinary outfit. And they do some unbelievable things to create a culture, you know, within that. And I think that's one of their biggest reasons why they've been so successful. the clarity of purpose in the New Zealand rugby team is extraordinary. It's all about legacy. It's all about leaving that shirt in a better place than it was when you got it. You know, and everyone is aligned with that sense of purpose, which just drives so much fuel and energy and purpose. They also do something, they do some very interesting things culturally. I think one of the things they do is they have a dual management process, which I think is sort of kind of connected to a coaching culture. So what they do is they at the beginning of a week before a match, the kind of managers and coaches are very much in charge. But when they get towards the latter end of the week, just before the game, they hand over the responsibility to the players. So they empower the players to take responsibility because it's them that's going to lead it on the pitch. And they see leadership as everyone is a leader. You know, I don't think leadership is about roles and responsibilities. Leadership is about influence. And every person on that team has to be empowered to be a leader. And I think that's a good example of a way to creating that sort of type of coaching culture. And look, it's about that word empowerment, isn't it? I think empowerment and coaching are synonymous. When people are empowered to come up with their own solutions, to think for themselves, to inquire, to get curious about how that they could improve, that I think that supports so many things. And I see it as a style of leadership that I think is going to become more and more important. Yes, command and control leadership is important at times. I've had the privilege of working with the Met Police for 2 to 3 years, and in certain contexts they absolutely need a command and control style leadership. But a large majority of the time, actually, even in that type of command structure, a coaching type of approach to leadership is inherently going to be more helpful. Hopefully that was a kind of good example there. And look, I just wanted to circle back as well to your last question around individual performance and how that's connected to team performance. So I think leadership starts with self-leadership. So if we're going to lead effectively well, and we want our teams to lead effectively well, we need to learn to lead ourselves first. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's all about putting our own oxygen mask first. And I think a large part of that self-leadership perspective is energy. You know, what's our energy like physically, mentally, emotionally and spiritually? Do we have great energy? Do we know how to create habits that support good energy on an individual level? And obviously, the organization plays a huge part on this. I don't think we should be just putting the emphasis on the individuals. And I think I get really frustrated with that around resilience training, because I think resilience and performance is a dynamic interaction between the individual and the environment. It's all very well organizations say, let's just help them get personal performance and personal resilience without them looking at the system, without them looking at the workload, without them looking at the environment that people work in. That is equally as important as personal performance. So I think it's a kind of foundational piece. But just because someone's individually performing well and or individually resilient doesn't necessarily mean you have a high performing resilient team, because I think they're different skill sets and they're skills. You know, so for a team performance, you know, we need clarity of vision and purpose. We need high levels of trust. We need great communication. But those things are very difficult to do if someone is stressed and burnt out. So that's why I think it's really important, and we need to start with the kind of personal leadership, self-leadership piece first, which will then go into supporting. Okay, once we've got that and we've got our oxygen mask on first and we're doing well and the environment's supporting us, yeah, okay, so now, you know, we can then really build on team performance as well.
Wow, thank you very much, Charlie. Lots of real takeaways there and messages for individuals and teams of whatever role we play, you know, in life. I'm sure our audience will relate to. And thank you very, very much. And thanks all for listening. For further information on this topic, do contact us and look out for our next podcast shortly.